if you're successful? What aspects of your business are keeping you up at night? If you had to set priorities now, what three things must be accomplished? So to further quote Alan Weiss, self-interest is most affected by results, not tasks, outputs, not input. That is why deliverables are only a commodity that will be comparison shopped by most buyers. Welcome to this week's episode of the Hourly to Exit podcast. I'm your host, Erin Austin, lawyer, mama of kid and doggy, tennis player, once and future trail runner, YouTube addict, and dreamer. I provide legal tips and bits for turning your expertise into recurring revenue, turning your time-intensive hourly-based business to one that is scalable and hopefully one day saleable is the journey from hourly to exit. This podcast is for experts, consultants, coaches, and other professional services providers with sophisticated corporate clients. If you're investing in the growth of your business, you need advice and resources that address the issues that set you apart from other service-based businesses. Those templates for online businesses don't mean a thing when your client sends their 50-page master services agreement to you for signature. Stop playing small because you don't know how to protect your ideas. Hourly to Exit is here to show you how to navigate the maze of contracts and intellectual property issues so that you can safely and profitably share your ideas with clients and with collaborators. Before we dive in, please remember that this podcast provides general information only. The content of this podcast should not be taken as legal advice for any individual case or situation. The information presented is not intended to be a substitute for professional legal consultation. Each legal situation is unique, and the laws and regulations can vary widely by location, and they do change over time. For specific legal advice regarding your individual circumstances, please consult with a qualified attorney who can address your specific needs. Now, let's get started with today's topic. Hello, ladies. Welcome to this week's episode of Hourly to Exit. This is the first in a three-part series about licensing your expertise. So it follows a wonderful interview that I had in episode 84 with Pamela Slim. So Pam's agency specializes in the design and development of certification and licensing programs. So if you go back and listen to that one, if you haven't already, it gives a great overview and the different types of licensing and certification programs for you to consider, the challenges and opportunities, and some of the minimum requirements. When you go back and listen to that, you will see that as much as we love talking about licensing, you know, I love talking about it, the traditional licensing and certification program is not for everyone. So for instance, you may not have the right audience to do a licensing program. You may not want to maintain the infrastructure. It's not a one and done. You have to make sure you're tracking all of these things, getting paid for them, making sure that the materials stay up to date, or you may not have a fully fleshed out process. If you're going to license something for somebody else to deliver your expertise, you need to really have that very well codified. That's something that Pam talks a lot about as well in that episode. So there's a number of reasons why a traditional licensing or certification program isn't for you. So this series is going to talk about some edge cases where we can still take advantage of creating leverage in our businesses through licensing, even if it isn't through what we may see on the interwebs about what a certification or licensing program is. This week, I'm going to talk about licensing when you provide bespoke custom services. So we've already determined that because of the nature of your services, that traditional licensing or certification program doesn't make sense. Your clients demand a custom solution that is specific to their needs. They don't want something off the shelf, and you get paid the big bucks to do that, and you enjoy it as well. Instead of changing what you do, which is to provide those high volume custom services, We're not changing what you do. Instead, we're going to change how you sell what you do. So what does that mean? I'm going to start with an example that involves Microsoft. And so this is something I did not know about the origin of Microsoft until I read it in the book, Good Strategy, Bad Strategy by Richard Rammelt. And so he tells the story about how Microsoft came to be the behemoth that it is. So I'm just reading an excerpt here. Oh, by the way, I think I need to preface this, that it was work for IBM that is the beginning of Microsoft as we know it. So this reference to the largest computer company in the world is a reference to IBM. All right, here we go. When the largest computer company in the world comes knocking at your door in 1980, asking if you can provide an operating system for a new personal computer, you say, yes, we can. And be sure to insist, as Bill Gates did in 1980, that after they pay you for the software, the contract permits you to sell it to third parties. You might just become the richest person in the world. Now, the way that is written isn't quite accurate. It wasn't that IBM owned it and they got to sell it. You can't keep selling the same thing. What you can do is you can keep licensing the same thing, assuming you retain ownership. So what happened in the Microsoft-IBM relationship is that although it was custom, I mean, there's a new personal computer, create an operating system for my personal computer. It was commissioned by IBM, but instead of having that typical language that we see in client agreements that the client owns 100% of the deliverables as a work for hire, instead, Microsoft retained the rights and was then, I think it was called the IBM DOS, but became the PC DOS. They retained the rights in it and they could then license it to other hardware providers. At the time, hardware was king, and so IBM obviously undervalued the software. But the point is, what IBM needed, the solution that IBM needed was an operating system, and they got the operating system. So there is an example of a custom commission deliverable where you retain the rights and then are able to license it to other clients. So imagine that seems kind of impossible to you. I mean, lightning only strikes, well, it does strike more than once, but what's the likelihood of it happening again? But I want you to consider where we are now as an economy. There's been a shift from ownership to access. Generally in businesses, there was a time when you always had your own server, and now many things are in the cloud. There was a time when all of your platforms that you ran your business on were custom developed. And now people are using SaaSes. Even the largest corporations are using SaaS. In our personal lives, Uber and Lyft, instead of owning a car. And of course, why buy the dress when you can rent the runway? So there is generally a movement towards access as a way from ownership. And obviously in a digital world, that makes it even easier. Back when you received, you know, software on a disk, so you owned it, it's different than now when you can just access it. So there's lots of ways where we can look at what's happened in the last 40 years, 44 years, to that would encourage more access versus ownership. When I talk about SaaS and renting dresses instead of buying them, I know that they aren't the bespoke professional services that you provide, but I want to look at two cases where we can have bespoke services, but still apply the Microsoft lesson to what we're doing today. So the first scenario is when we license a custom solution to the client instead of selling deliverables to the client. As you know, every marketing and business coach will tell you, your clients want a solution. They want results. They don't want deliverables. They don't want inputs. When you're creating a proposal, you're talking about the benefits, not about your certifications and you've got a degree from here and there. But it's that they're going to have this great result if they work with you. I'm going to do a super shallow dive into value-based pricing just because I think it creates a nice analogy to this structure. And again, it's very shallow. We love value-based pricing. Do the deep dive. go to Jonathan Stark or Alan Weiss for the deep dive, but I'm going to just use a few analogies as we talk about this type of licensing scenario. So when we are creating a proposal for our custom services, the first thing we need to do is understand what our client's objectives are. Jonathan Stark talks about the why conversation to make sure you understand what the client actually needs versus what the client wants. Similarly, Alan Weiss talks about the questions for establishing business objectives. These are, what would you like to accomplish? What would be the difference in your organization if you're successful? What aspects of your business are keeping you up at night? If you had to set priorities now, what three things must be accomplished? So to further quote Alan Weiss, self-interest is most affected by results, not tasks, outputs, not input. That is why deliverables are only a commodity that will be comparison shopped by most buyers. A report, a training session, a coaching regimen, these are simply tasks performed, but improved morale, faster customer responsiveness, and more effective leadership are highly valuable organizational outputs. That is what your clients pay you for. So the fee should be based on future improvement, not on past technique. So some of the things that your client's desired future state are higher productivity, lower attrition, improved image, greater market share, greater profit, happier customers. You get the drift. So let's take a more specific example. You have a client. Their cost of acquisition is 3 times the industry average, obviously greatly affecting their profitability. You've gone through your why conversations and done your assessment, and you can see that their offboarding process is the problem. That it is not set up to encourage upsells, to get repeat business, and to encourage referrals. So what will your proposal look like? Will your proposal look like, okay, I'm going to do some training sessions and I'm going to leave you some reports? Or is your proposal going to say, I am going to increase upsells by this, repeat business by that, referrals by the other? That is what you are selling them. And so instead of selling the deliverables, instead, you're going to sell them access to the custom solution that you create for this client to get those upsells, get that repeat business, get those referrals. So you have created it in response to their specific circumstance. But once you have the solution in place, do they need to own it to get the solution, to get the desired outcome, or do they just need access to it to get the desired outcome? As with a value-based proposal, you can present these options to your client of how they want to get the desired outcome. If there is no actual value, and I mean not kind of default value, I'll call it default value of owning anything, of everything, but there isn't an actual value in owning the solution. If the client can get 100% of the transformation that you've promised by getting access to it, then this is a possible place to have a license. So here you have the win-win. The client only pays for the rights to the solution that it needs, and you get to build a valuable IP library of solutions that you've provided that you can use for other clients in the future. Now, it's obviously the client will be very concerned about making sure they have access to it. So that is where your license agreement comes in. You have that license agreement that clearly states you have a non-exclusive, of course, perpetual worldwide license, irrevocable license to use the solution that they can create derivatives from if they don't want to worry about it. If they want to change something later that they have to come back to you, that they can use it with other subsidiaries. They don't want to have to worry about it if they acquire a company, they have to come back to you. So you give them, this is one of those instances where you want that license to be as broad as possible so that the client can do the same things with that licensed solution that they could do with the own solution, except that they would have it non-exclusively. I will put in the show notes because I'm not going to think off the top of my head. I did a LinkedIn Live where I talk about the downside of a very broad license in your pre-existing materials to your clients. But in this instance, because you have created it and they paid for the development of the solution, it is appropriate for it to be broader. So I know that's a lot to digest. I'm going to keep this one short because I know there's a lot to digest in this episode. But the point here is that we need to help the client understand what their needs are versus what their knee-jerk wants are, and that they can get the entirety of the transformation with a license and that they're not going to run into problems in the future, then that can be a great option. That is a win-win for you and your client. So this solution is not going to work for every single service. If you provide highly creative services, let's say you are an advertising agency and you write advertisements for your clients, the client is going to be the only person who has access to that, right? They're going to want to own it and they're not going to want anyone else to be able to use it. However, if we provide transformation to our clients, then that is a different matter. I mean, we could say that the ad agencies maybe, and I don't know because I don't know ad agencies, but maybe what they are actually providing their clients are just deliverables. I don't know if they actually promise transformations. They just promise a really cool, slick ad campaign. And maybe it works, maybe it doesn't. Maybe it tanks your stock price in some circumstances. So that is a very deliverables-based business. And so if you have a very deliverables-based business, it might be problematic. But if you have a solutions-based business, then this is a possible option for you. All right, now let's look at another scenario. Let's say that you do have solutions that incorporate the client's proprietary information. So I'd like to share an example from a participant in one of my workshops. So she is a futurist, and she provides very sophisticated analyses of what the state of the world will be in 10 to 15 years to pharmaceutical companies, because they have very long research and development cycles. So to paraphrase Wayne Gretzky, the pharmaceutical company wants to skate to where the puck is going to be and not where it is today. So she receives from her clients very valuable, confidential, proprietary information that she can use to decide what direction she needs to research. So she would know she's doing the research because they're looking at what type of joints people will want in the future, or what type of a diabetes medication you'll need in the future. And so she will know proprietary information. Obviously, the client will continue to own that proprietary information, and she will not be able to use it with any other clients. However, a lot of that research would not be proprietary to the client. For instance, if she is giving a report on what the climate will look like in 10 to 15 years, what the geopolitical forces will be, what immigration patterns will be, that is not specific to the client. It does not involve any of the client's proprietary information. Even though the only reason she researched an area, I have this example here that I made up, that if she researched the likelihood of a unified Ireland in 15 years, and the only reason she looked at that is because the client asked about it, because they have something that they're planning to do with Ireland that makes more sense if it's unified than if it's not unified. That even though that is commissioned research, because the only reason she did it was at the client's request, the results are not specific to the client. So rather than assigning all of the rights in that research to the client, she would license that portion of the research that's not specific to the client, does not utilize the client's proprietary information. They would get a license to that part of the research. So now she retains that research that she's done about the likelihood of Republic of Ireland and North Ireland uniting in the future. She retains that. She can license it. Another client comes along and like, hey, that we want to find out about United Ireland. She can pull that out. She's not selling deliverables. So that doesn't change the cost or the value to the client of that research, but she does not have to do the research over again, therefore increasing her profits. Also, maybe over time, over the course of several years, she would have created a database of research that she can then license by subscription to other companies that would not be able to afford her very high six-figure fees. And so there's a number of ways that even when you are providing high-value commissioned services to still incorporate licensing into your business. So that is all I'm going to ask you to chew on for today, but I really want you to use this as a spark to help you think about how, even though you have very highly customized services, how you can incorporate licensing. So take this some time to look back at maybe the last half dozen clients that you worked with. Were there opportunities in there for you to retain rights in some or all of those deliverables that you would then be able to use in future engagements? Things that where the client would get 100% of the transformation, whether they own the solution or were licensed perpetual non-exclusive rights to use those solutions, or if there are parts of the deliverables that do not involve clients' proprietary information and that could be of use to others in the future. I welcome your questions about this. I know this was a lot to wrap your head around. I welcome your questions and your comments as my thoughts about this also continue to evolve. Thanks again. See you next time. This week's episode of the Hourly to Exit podcast is sponsored by the NDA Navigator. Non-disclosure agreements, also known as NDAs, are the bedrock of protecting your ideas and your business's confidential information. Of course, I recommend that you have a lawyer review any agreement before you sign it. However, facing a constant stream of NDAs can be overwhelming, especially when time and budget constraints prevent you from seeking full legal review. That's where the NDA Navigator comes in. Designed specifically for entrepreneurs, consultants, and business owners with corporate clients, the NDA Navigator is your guide to understanding, negotiating, and implementing NDAs. Empower yourself with legal insights and practical tools when you don't have the time or funds for a full legal review. Get 20% off by using the coupon code H2E at protectyourexpertise.com. Thank you for joining me for another episode of the Hourly to Exit podcast. Don't forget to check out the show notes for the resources and organizations mentioned during the episode. If you find the podcast to be valuable, please subscribe so you get notified of new episodes every week. And I would be so grateful for a rating and review, and it helps get the word out. See you next week.